Case 25. This case excerpt is from a discussion one had with a soul called Apollon, who discussed her reunification upon arriving home in a more flamboyant way than the soul in the quote above. Apollon is a level 2 soul who has just returned to the spirit world from a hard life in Ireland as a poor woman who died in 1910. Although physically strong and self-reliant, Apollon was married to a domineering, alcoholic husband and had to raise 5 children virtually alone. She suffered from a lack of personal freedom and self-expression. I see Apollon's welcoming home party as a reflection of a job well done after this difficult life. Dr. N, tell me, Apollon, after you have finished with the initial greetings from your spirit group, does the time soon arrive when you unify with your own energy reserve? S, grinning, my guide Canaries enjoys making a ceremony out of unification. Dr. N, with the energy you left behind? S, yes, Canaries goes to an alcove in our enclosure where my energy is stored in a glass urn, waiting for me. It is under his care. Dr. N, I gather your reserve energy has not been too active since your absence. What percentage of the total did you leave behind? S, only 15%, I needed a lot for my Irish life. This part was able to engage with my group and I could move around our area but one, didn't participate in recreational diversions. Dr. N, I understand, but is this weakened 15% a completely whole representation of your soul? S, vehemently, absolutely, only a smaller version of me. Dr. N, and was this 15% of you able to keep up with group lessons and greet people while the other 85% was on Earth? S, to an extent, yes. I continue to gain knowledge in both settings. Earth and the spirit world, Dr. N, offhanded, I'm curious about something. If that 15% is still viable, why don't you just go get it yourself? What do you need Canaries for? S, offended, that would spoil his ceremony. Canaries is the keeper of my flame, so to speak, while 1 AM gone. Besides, what you suggest would be an infringement on his prerogatives to assist me with melding with my energy. He wants to make a ceremony of it, Dr. N. I'm sorry if I was too presumptuous, Apollon. Why don't you give me a visual picture of the ceremony? S. Joyfully, Canaries goes to the alcove and, with the proud flourish of a nurturing father, brings it out while all my friends gather around and cheer about a job well done in Ireland. Dr. N. Does this party include the soul who was your husband in the Irish life? S. Yes, yes. He is in the front row cheering the loudest. He is not really the same person out of his Irish body. Dr. N. All right, then what does Canaries do? S. Laughs, he takes my energy in the greenish glass urn out of the alcove. It is glowing but he rubs it with his hands to make it shine brighter while enjoying our expressions of pleasure. Then he comes close and throws the cloud of light energy over me like a mantle of high office. He assists with my melding with his own powerful vibrations. Dr. N, at this moment, what does having all your energy feel like? S, softly, joining with oneself resembles 2 globs of mercury coming together on a glass plate. They flow into each other naturally and instantly become homogeneous. I feel a resurgence of power and identity. The warmth of the merger gives me a sense of serenity and peace as well. One feel, well, my immortality. Dr. N, rhetorically, to elicit response, isn't it a shame we don't take 100% of our energy to Earth? S, reacts immediately, are you serious? No human mind could retain much of itself under those conditions, but I needed a lot for the Irish life. Dr. N, what percentage do you have in your current body? S, oh, around 60% and it's plenty. Dr. N, one have been told of physical planets where souls go that allow for all of our energy and the retention of full memory. S, sure, and many of these life forms allow for mental telepathy, too. Physical worlds like Earth, with the type of body we have, it's a stage of mental development. Right now, our evolutionary development sets up conditions which we must work through on our own. The limitations are good for us right now. Dr. N. Apollon, explain to me what you understand about how much energy you should take to Earth before every life. S. My energy level is monitored by canaries and my council for each body depending upon the physical and mental characteristics of that body. Certain bodies require more spiritual energy than others and they know what conditions exist before we enter the life. Dr. N. Well, you told me this Irish woman was physically strong and, I assume, she had a strong will as well for you to have survived intact. Nevertheless, you took a lot of your energy to Ireland. S. Yes, she was stronger than I am today, but she needed my spiritual help and I needed her strength to assert what influence I could to survive with some identity in a life of deprivation. We were not always in harmony. Dr. N. So when you are not in harmony with a body it takes more personal soul energy? S. Oh, yes. And if your environment is harsh, that too must be taken into consideration. I feel very much in sync with my current body, although one sometimes wish I had the stamina of the Irish body. There are many variables. That is the challenge. That's what is fun. Note, today, Apollon has incarnated as an independent businesswoman who travels all over the world for an international financial consulting firm. She has had numerous offers of marriage, all of which she has refused. Occasionally, a client will tell me that after a former life they preferred to wait longer than normal before unifying with their energy. This is illustrated by the following quote: "Sometimes I like to wait until after my council meeting because I don't want the fresh energy to dilute the memories and feelings I had in the life just lived. If I did infuse myself, by taking in reserve energy, that former life would be less real to me. I want my thoughts to be centered on answering questions about my work in that body with a clear, lucid memory of each event. I want to retain every emotional feeling I had of these events as they occurred so I can better describe why I took certain actions. My friends don't like to do this, but I can always recharge and rest later." Tilde 5. Soul group systems, soul birthing. Think it is appropriate to begin an exploration of soul life with the I creation of that life. Very few of my subjects have the memory capacity to go back to their origins as particles of energy. Some details of a soul's early life come to me from the rank beginners. These young souls have a shorter life history both in and out of the spirit world, so they still have fresh memories. However, at best, my level I subjects have only fleeting memories about the genesis of self. The following quotes from two beginner souls are illustrations. My soul was created out of a great irregular cloudy mass. I was expelled as a tiny particle of energy from this intense, pulsating bluish, yellow and white light. The pulsations send out hailstorms of soul matter. Some fall back and are reabsorbed, but I continued outward and was being carried along in a stream with others like me. The next thing I knew, I was in a bright enclosed area with very loving beings taking care of me. I remember being in a nursery of some sort where we were like unhatched eggs in a beehive. When I acquired more awareness, I learned one was in the nursery world of Euras. I don't know how I got there. I was like an egg in embryonic fluid waiting to be fertilized, and I sensed there were many other cells of young lights who were coming awake with me. There was a group of mothers, beautiful and loving, who pierced our membrane sacs and opened us. There were swirling currents of intense, nurturing lights around us, and I could hear music. My awareness began with curiosity. Soon I was taken from Euras and joined other children in a different setting. The most revealing reports about soul nurseries come my way only infrequently from a very few highly advanced subjects. These are the specialists known as incubator mothers. The next case is a representative of this branch of service who is an exceptional level V called Sina. Case 26. This individual is a specialist with children both in and out of the spirit world. Currently, she works through hospice with severely ill children. In her past life, she was a Polish woman who, although not Jewish, volunteered to enter a German internment camp in 1939. She did so ostensibly to wait on the officers and perform kitchen duties, which was a ruse. She wanted to be near the Jewish children entering the camp and to help them in any way possible. As a local resident of a nearby town, she could have left the camp at any time in the first year. Then it was too late and the soldiers would not allow her to leave. Eventually, she died in the camp. This advanced soul might have survived longer if she had brought more than 30% of her energy to sustain herself during the hardships of this assignment. Such is the confidence of a level V. Dr. N. Sina, what has been your most significant experience between your lives? S. Without hesitation, I go to the place of hatching, where souls are hatched. I am an incubator mother, a kind of midwife. Dr. N., are you telling me you work in a soul nursery? S., brightly, yes, we help the new ones emerge. We facilitate early maturation, by being warm, gentle and caring. We welcome them. Dr. N., please explain the surroundings of the place to me. S., it's gas-like, a honeycomb of cells with swirling currents of energy above. There is intense light. Dr. N., when you say honeycomb, I wonder if you mean that the nursery has a beehive structure, or what? S., yes, although the nursery itself is a vast emporium without seeming to be limited by outside dimensions. The new souls have their own incubator cells where they stay until their growth is sufficient to be moved away from the emporium. Dr. N., as an incubator mother, when do you first see the new souls? S., we are in the delivery suite, which is a part of the nursery, at one end of the emporium. The newly arrived ones are conveyed as small masses of white energy encased in a gold sack. They move slowly in a majestic, orchestrated line of progression toward us. Dr. N., from where? S., at our end of the emporium under an archway, the entire wall is filled with a molten mass of high intensity energy and vitality. It feels as if it's energized by an amazing love force rather than a discernible heat source. The mass pulsates and undulates in a beautiful flowing motion. Its color is like that on the inside of your eyelids if you were to look through closed eyes at the sun on a bright day. Dr. N., and from out of this mass you see souls emerge. S., from the mass a swelling begins, never exactly from the same site twice. The swelling increases and pushes outward, becoming a formless bulge. The separation is a wondrous moment. A new soul is born. It's totally alive with an energy and distinctness of its own. Note, another one of my level verses made this statement about incubation. I see an egg-shaped mass with energy flowing out and back in. When it expands, new soul energy fragments are spawned. When the bulge contracts, I think it pulls back those souls which were not successfully spawned. For some reason these fragments could not make it on to the next step of individuality. Dr. N., what do you see beyond the mass, Sina? S., long pause, I see this beatific glow of orange-yellow. There is a violet darkness beyond, but not cold darkness, it is eternity. Dr. N., can you tell me more about the line of progression of new souls moving toward you out of the mass? S., out of the fiery orange-yellow, the progression is slow as each hatchling emerges from the energy mass. They are conveyed off to various points where mothering souls like myself are positioned. Dr. N., how many mothers do you see? S., one can see five nearby, who, like me, are in training. Dr. N., what are the responsibilities of an incubator mother? S., we hover around the hatchlings so we can towelry them after opening their gold sacks. Their progression is slow because this allows us to embrace their tiny energy in a timeless, exquisite fashion. Dr. N., what does towelrying mean to you? S., we dry the new souls, wet energy, so to speak. I can't really explain all this well in human language. It's a form of hugging new white energy. Dr. N., so, now you see basically white energy? S., yes, and as they come next to us, up close, I see more blue and violet glowing around them. Dr. N., why do you think this is so? S., pause, then softly, oh, I see now, this is an umbilical, the genesis cord of energy which connects each one. Dr. N., from what you are saying, I get a picture of a long pearl necklace. The souls are the pearls connected in a line. Is this at all accurate? S. Yes, rather like a string of pearls on a silvery conveyor belt. Dr. N., okay, now tell me, when you embrace each new soul, dry them out, does this give them life? S. Reacts quickly, oh, no. Through us, not from us, comes a life force of all-knowing love and knowledge. What we pass on with our vibrations during the drying of new energies, the essence of a beginning, a hopefulness of future accomplishment. The mothers call it, the love hug. This involves instilling thoughts of what they are and what they can become. When we enfold a new soul in a love hug, it infuses this being with our understanding and compassion. Dr. N., let me carry this vibrational hugging one step further. Does each new soul have an individual character at this point? Do you add or subtract from its given identity? S. No, this is in place upon arrival, although the new soul does not yet know who they are. We bring nurturing. We are announcing to the hatchling that it is time to begin. By sparking its energy, we bring to the soul an awareness of its existence. This is the time of the awakening. Dr. N., Sina, please help me here. When I think of obstetric nurses in a hospital maternity ward holding and nurturing new human babies, they have no idea what kind of person a baby will turn out to be. Do you function in the same manner, not knowing about the immortal character of these new souls? S. Laughs, we function as nursery caregivers, but this is not a human maternity ward. At the moment we embrace the new ones, we know something of their identity. Their individual patterns become more evident as we unite our energy with them to give them sustenance. This allows us to better utilize our vibrations to activate, to ignite, their awareness. All this is part of their beginning. Dr. N., as a trainee, how did you acquire this knowledge of the proper employment of vibrations with new souls? S. This is something new mothers have to learn. If it is not performed properly, the hatchling souls move on not feeling fully ready. Then one of the nursery masters must step in later. Dr. N., can you take me a little further here, Sina? During your love hug, when you first embrace these souls, do you and the mothers discern an organized selection process behind the assignment of a new soul's identity? For instance, could we have 10 courageous type souls come through followed by 10 more cautious souls? S. That is so mechanistic. Each soul is unique in its totality of characteristics, created by a perfection that I cannot begin to describe. What I can tell you is that no two souls are alike, none, ever. Note, I have heard from a few other subjects that one of the basic reasons each soul is different from the other is that after the source breaks off energy fragments to create a soul, what is left of the original mass becomes infinitesimally altered, so it is not exactly the same as before. Thus, the source is like a divine mother who would never create twin children. Dr. N., pressing, wanting my subject to correct me, do you think this is a totally random selection? There is no order of characteristics with matched similarities of any kind? You know this to be true? S. Frustrated. How could I know this unless I was a creator? There are souls with similarities and those with none, all in the same batch. The combinations are mixed. As a mother, I can tweak each major trait with one sense, and this is why I can tell you no two have exactly the same combinations of character. Dr. N., well, subject breaks in to continue. S., I have the sense that there is a powerful presence on the other side of the archway who is managing things. If there is a key to the energy patterns, we do not need to know of this. Note, these are the moments I wait for in my sessions, where I try to push open the door to the ultimate source. The door never opens more than a crack. Dr. N., please tell me what you feel about this presence, about the energy mass which is bringing these new souls to you. Surely, you and the other mothers must have thought about the origins of souls here even though you cannot see it. S. In a whisper, I feel the creator is close by, but may not actually be doing the work of production. Dr. N., gently, meaning the energy mass may not be the primary creator. S. Uncomfortable. I think there are others who assist. I don't know. Dr. N. Taking another tack. Is it not true, Sina, that there are imperfections to the new souls? If they were created perfect, there would be no reason for them to be created at all by a perfect creator. S. Doubtfully, everything here seems to be perfection. Dr. N. One temporarily move in another direction. Do you work only with souls coming to Earth? S. Yes, but they could go to all kinds of places. Only a fraction come to Earth. There are many physical worlds similar to Earth. We call them pleasure worlds and suffering worlds. Dr. N. And do you know when a soul is right for Earth based upon your incarnation experience? S. Yes, I do. I know that the souls who come to worlds such as Earth need to be strong and resilient because of the pain they have to endure along with the joy. Dr. N. That's my understanding, too. And when these souls become contaminated by the human body, particularly the young ones, this is because they are less than perfect. Might that be true? S. Well, I suppose, yes. Dr. N. Continuing. Which indicates to me that they must work to acquire more substance than they had originally in order to acquire full enlightenment. Would you accept that premise? S. Long pause, then with a sigh, one think perfection is there, with the newly created. Maturity begins by the shattering of innocence with new souls, not because they are originally flawed. Overcoming obstacles makes them stronger, but the acquired imperfections will never be totally erased until all souls are joined together, when incarnation ends. Dr. N., isn't this going to be difficult with new souls being created all the time to take the place of those ending their incarnations on Earth? S. This too will end when all people, all races, nationalities unite as one. This is why we are sent to places such as Earth to work. Dr. N., so, when the training ends, will the universe we live in die as well? S., it may die before. It doesn't matter, there are others. Eternity never ends. It is the process which is meaningful because it allows us to savor the experience and express ourselves, and to learn. Before continuing with the evolution of a soul's progress, I should list what differences I have learned about their existence once they are created. 1. There are energy fragments which appear to return to the energy mass that created them before they even reach the nursery. I do not know the reason for their being aborted. Others, who do reach the nursery, are unable to handle learning to be on an individual basis during early maturation. Later, they are associated with collective functions and, from what I can determine, never leave the spirit world. 2. There are energy fragments who have individual soul essences that are not inclined, or have the necessary mental fabric, to incarnate in physical form on any world. They are often found on mental worlds, and they also appear to move easily between dimensions. 3. There are energy fragments with individual soul essences who incarnate only on physical worlds. These souls may well receive training in the spirit world with mental spheres between lives. 1. Do not find them as interdimensional travelers. 4. There are energy fragments who are souls with the ability and inclination to incarnate and function as individuals in all types of physical and mental environments. This does not necessarily give them more or less enlightenment than other soul types. However, their wide range of practical experience positions them for many specialization opportunities and assignments of responsibility. The grand scheme for the newborn soul starts slowly. Once they are released from the nursery, these souls do not enter into incarnations, nor are they even formed into soul groups right away. Here is one description of this transition period from the still fresh memory of a young level 1 soul with only a couple of incarnations under his belt. Before I was assigned to my soul group and began coming to Earth, I remember being given the opportunity to experience a semi-physical world as a light form. It was more a mental world than physical because my surroundings were not completely solid and there was no biological life. I saw other young souls with me and WC could move easily around the ground as luminous bulbs with a semblance of the human form. We were not doing, just being, and getting the feel of what it would be like to be solid. Although the setting was more astral than temporal, we were learning to communicate with each other as beings living in a community. We had no responsibilities. There was a utopian atmosphere of tremendous love, security and protection everywhere. I have since learned that nothing is static and this, the beginning time, would be the easiest of our existence. Soon we would exist in a world where we would not be protected, in places where we would have memories of pain and loneliness, and pleasure too, and that these experiences are the teaching memories. Spiritual settings. While in trance, my subjects describe many visual images of the spirit world in earthly symbolisms. They may create structural images from their own planetary experiences or have these images created for them by guides seeking to raise their comfort level with familiar surroundings. After discussing this aspect of unconscious memory at lectures, I have had people say that, regardless of the consistency of these observations, they strain credibility. How could schoolrooms, libraries and temples exist in the spirit world? I address these questions by explaining that past observational memory is metaphoric as a current perspective. Original scenes from all our lives never leave our memory as souls. In the spirit world, seeing a temple is not a literal record of stone blocks but rather a visualization of the meaning the temple has to that soul. Back on Earth, memories of past events in our soul life are reconstructions of circumstances and events based upon interpretations and conscious knowledge. All client memory retrieval is based upon observations of the soul mind processing information through a human mind. Regardless of their visual structures of spiritual settings, I always look to the functional aspects of what a subject is doing in them. Once the new souls leave their protective cocoons, they enter into community life. As they begin their incarnations, descriptions of the places and structures they see between lives take on the same flavor as that of older souls who go to Earth. Sometimes these descriptions are not so earthly. I hear reports of cathedral-like structures of glass, great halls of crystals, geometric buildings with many angles and smooth, domed enclosures with outlines. Then, too, my subjects might say their surroundings have no structures, only fields of flowers and countryside scenes with forests and lakes. People in hypnosis display a sense of awe as they report floating toward their destinations in the spirit world. Many are so overcome they cannot adequately describe what they see. I hear many accounts about the sheer movement of souls in transition going from place to place. The following account is from a level 4 subject who uses geometric shapes to describe the properties of the various settings he sees. One do a lot of traveling around in the spirit world. The geometric shapes I see represent certain functions to me. Each structure has its own energy system. The pyramids are for solitude, meditation and healing. The rectangular shapes are for past life reviews and study. The spheroids are used to examine future lives and the cylinder portals are for traveling to other worlds to gain perspective. Sometimes I pass great hubs of soul activity, like an airport, with people being paged telepathically. The hubs are huge, prismatic wheels with directional spoke lines which curve away from you. It's busy but well organized. Laughs. You can't rush in too fast or you might overshoot the particular line you want out of these great hubs. These centers are ports of call with host souls directing traffic and looking out for inquiries from travelers. Everything moves with a soft, comfortable floating motion and there are beautiful, harmonic tones upon which souls can vibrationally lock onto, keeping them on track to their destinations. There is a statement from the Upanishads of India about our senses being carried in memory after death. I believe this old philosophical text is correct in the assumption that the senses, emotions and human ego are a path to infinite experience, which provides a physical consciousness to the immortal self. These sentiments were expressed by a client of mine in a cogent way, We can create anything we want in the spirit world to remind us of places and things we enjoyed on Earth. Our physical simulations are almost perfect, to many they are perfect, but without a body a sense. Well, to me they have the flavor of imitations. I love oranges. I can create an orange, here and even come close to reproducing its pithy, sweet taste. Still, it is not quite the same as biting into an orange on Earth.